In 5, 4, 3, 2.
I'm Joe Wade Formicola, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini.
Real name, no gimmicks.
On 750 AM, KOAL.
So I came to the grave. Real name, no gimmicks. That's why I ain't got no.
We're back on Drive Time Sports. KOAL 107.3 FM, 750 AM, having an interesting conversation at the moment with Galen White, who is the author of the book Singles and Smiles, How Artie Wilson Broke Baseball's Color Barrier. Now, Galen, you and I had a conversation off of the cuff, and I wanted to go in to talk about the relationship of Artie Wilson and Willie Mays, because it's actually quite interesting, and you had pointed out to me off of the cuff something that I was unaware of. There was a really good chance that Willie Mays could have become a New York Yankee had things just shifted a little bit.
That could have easily have happened. Willie Mays' father, Willie Mays Sr., his nickname was Cat, was an outstanding ball player himself. He had played against Artie in the Birmingham Industrial League. They were good friends. When Artie went to the Oakland Oaks in 1949, of course, he was one of the stars in the league. About midway in the season, he had persuaded the Oaks to sign two players that he knew from Negro League Baseball. One of them was Alonzo Perry, and the other one was Parnell Woods. Willie Mays Sr. wanted Artie to become Willie Jr.'s legal guardian so that he could play for the Oaks. Without Artie becoming his legal guardian, Willie, of course, was still in high school. That wouldn't have been possible. But Willie Mays Sr. had given Artie his permission to take him out to Oakland. Artie took the proposition to the Oakland Oaks management. In fact, he said that Charlie Dressen, the manager, he says, you know how good of arm Jackie Jensen has, and Jackie Jensen had been an All-America football player at University of California, an outstanding baseball player, and went on to become a star with the Red Sox and the Yankees. He said, you know how good Jensen's arm is? He says, well, Willie Mays' arm is twice as good. And he says he can cover more ground than anybody else. The Oaks did not act on Artie's recommendation, either in late 49 or the following year at spring training. Again, Willie Mays Sr. Went to Artie and said, take him out west and let him play for the Oaks. And again, the Oaks just didn't act on it. Had the Oaks allowed Willie to play for them in either 49 or 50, most likely he would have wound up with the Yankees. And here's why. Billy Martin was a second baseman for the Oakland Oaks in 1949. Jackie Jensen was an outfielder for the Yankees in 49. Both wound up with the Yankees in 1950. So it's very possible that Willie, had he gone to Oakland in either 49 or 50, that the Yankees, because they were the powerhouse, had the most money, that they would have done the deal with Oakland that would have put him in pinstripes and put him in the same outfield with Mickey Mantle.
Amazing to think about how that could have changed the course of history. But as far as Artie's relationship with Willie Mays goes, in 1951, Artie had a chance to play in the majors, and he did play with Leo Durocher. And I want to talk about Leo here a little bit later on. But it was actually Artie that wanted to go back down to the minors to basically give up his spot for Willie Mays, correct?
Yes, there was an unwritten quota for a number of black players among the owners. It was three. The Giants already had four. Bringing Willie up and keeping Artie would make it five. For that reason, the owner, Horace Stoneham, wanted to send Artie down. Artie, of course, would have liked to have stayed in the majors, but he wanted to only stay if he could play every day. He started only one game with the Giants. He was used mostly as a backup for Alvin Dark at shortstop and Eddie Stanky at second. Artie, of course, was very familiar with Willie Mays and his talents because he'd played alongside him in Birmingham in 48. So he went to Leo and proposed to Leo to, hey, send me down. I want to play every day. And not only that, Artie made more money with Oakland in the minors than he was making with the Giants in the majors. And that was not uncommon. A lot of the players in the Coast League made more money out there on the West Coast than they did up in the majors. So Leo, of course, balked. He liked Artie. He thought he was the best utility man in the league. He thought also he could have started shortstop for almost any other team in the league. So he wanted to hang on to Artie. But Artie persuaded him, send me down, bring Willie up. So in effect, Willie and Artie traded places.
Again, we're being joined right now by Galen White as we talk about Artie Wilson and the new book from Galen White, Singles and Smiles. Again, it's going to give you kind of everything you need to know about Artie Wilson, a very fascinating individual. And in fact, in 1951, as we were just talking about, he plays for the Giants. He only had something like 20 plate appearances, right, Galen? I mean, it was a very small sample size.
Well, what's interesting is black players at that time, they were on a short leash. You had to almost be an instant success or else you were gone. So let's compare what Artie did with what Willie Mays did. Artie was 4-for-22. He went to bat actually 24 times, walked twice. So his official stats are 4-for-22. That means he batted 182. When Willie Mays came up in his first 21 at-bats, Willie Mays only had one hit. Now, he was batting 047 at the end of that time in Minneapolis, where he'd been playing prior to that. He was hitting 477. Of course, Willie Mays was 20 years old, and his future was ahead of him. Artie was 30, and most people thought he was even older than that. So in the minds of some, his best days were behind him. But it just goes to show that, you know, Artie actually did a little bit better than Willie in his first 20-something at-bats. But because he was older and because he wasn't playing the position where the Giants were in severe need of someone, the Giants really needed a center fielder in 1951, and Willie, of course, was the answer to that, and he became Rookie of the Year in 1951. So that's kind of what happened, and it also shows Willie was the future. His teammates on the 48 Black Barons, they all knew that Willie was a phenom, and they all wanted him to succeed. So they all became, you might say, his mentors and his protectors. They looked after him. That was unusual in the Negro Leagues. Usually a young guy came along, nobody helped him, because that guy might take your job. So in Willie's case, though, that was a lot different. Now, everything we've talked about so far with Artie, I've left one thing out, and it's amazing. If you look in the book, there's a picture of Artie with Alvin Dark. And Artie is showing Alvin Dark his right thumb, which, of course, the top of it is missing. The top of his right thumb, which is on his throwing hand, was cut off in a machine shop accident when he was 19 years old. So everything Artie did in baseball, in the Negro Leagues and organized baseball, was done with just part of his right thumb.
Wow. It's amazing to think about.
It really is. And when you think about, you know, handling the bat, throwing, he adjusted his throwing from straight overhand to sort of a sidearm. But I think it just speaks, too, to Artie's determination. He had this passion for baseball, I don't think second to no one, not even Ernie Banks. And here's why I say that. Ernie's famous for saying, let's play two. Well, Artie once played five games within 36 hours. He played in a doubleheader in Birmingham with the Black Barons. They then went to Memphis for Labor Day, played a doubleheader there. They had a game scheduled that night in Jackson, Mississippi. They played there. Five games within 36 hours in three cities. So Artie could have said, let's play five.
Galen, I want to ask a question about Artie getting to the majors and playing in the few games that he did play before he was sent back down to like 19 or 20 games that he played. How important was that to Artie, considering that he was beaten out by Jackie Robinson when Jackie broke the color barrier back in 1947? I mean, so 4 to 5 years later, how important was it for Artie to actually put on a big league uniform?
Well, of course, it was a dream fulfilled, and he said if he'd had another chance to play in the big leagues, he would have. But he didn't want to go back as a utility man. He wanted to play every day. And certainly there were teams like the Cubs, the Pirates, the Browns. There were a number of teams in the majors at that time that could have used a shortstop of Artie's caliber. But Artie had no regrets. In fact, the only regret he had nothing to do with him. His greatest regret, was that Josh Gibson, who he considered the greatest hitter ever to play the game, never got to play in the major leagues. Artie would tell you that if he had to do all over again, he'd do the same thing, over and over again. And to quote directly from Artie, all the riding on the buses we did, all the hassle we had, I still enjoyed it. Made a good living at it, I would do it again. And one other comment he made to me was, in terms of, well, was he born too soon? Well, Artie's answer to that is, like everything, there's a time for all things. It just wasn't the time for it. And that's why I wanted to tell the Artie Wilson story in Singles and Smiles, was to just shed some light on this ball player who not only was a great baseball player, but in my view, a wonderful human being who was uplifting to everybody who met him, including me. I didn't know a lot about his Negro League background when I first met him, but I remember walking into his house for the first time. I spent an entire weekend with him in 1975, and then again in a couple times in the 1990s, I spent some time with him in Portland, Oregon. And Artie was the kind of guy who won you over with his kindness and with his heart. And with my favorite story in the book is a fan in Sacramento who called him the N-word, yelled at pitchers to hit him in the head. This was when he first came into the league in 1949 with Oakland. By the time Artie ended his career, and he ended it in Sacramento in 1957, it was a freak eye injury that caused him to retire. This fan, by that time, was his biggest booster and organized Artie Wilson Appreciation Night. That's the effect that Artie Wilson had on people who took the time to get to know the man and not judge him by the skin color.
Truly an incredible story, and I definitely encourage every listener out there to go pick up Singles and Smiles, How Artie Wilson Broke Baseball's Color Barrier. Again, Galen White joining us. He is the author of the book, giving us a background on Artie Wilson. Truly some terrific stuff. Galen, before I let you go, I want you to go ahead and give the listeners some more information about Galen White. How can they find more of your work?
Well, the Bilko Athletic Club, the story of the 1956 Los Angeles Angels, and Steve Bilko, his last name Bilko, was taken by Phil Silvers in a television show in the 1950s called Sergeant Bilko, and later on that became the movie starring Steve Martin. And he was one of the greatest players in L.A., probably the most popular player in L.A. until Sandy Koufax came along and Nolan Ryan. The other book, I co-wrote a book with Handsome Ransom Jackson, and that's called Accidental Big Leaguer. And Ransom is 92 years old and still living in Athens, Georgia. He's the last Brooklyn Dodger to hit a home run. He was a two-time All-Star with the Chicago Cubs in 1954-55. It's a fun read. Ransom likes to call it beach reading, but it's full of history because he not only played for the Cubs when they were not a winner, but he played alongside Ernie Banks. He was acquired by the Dodgers to replace Jackie Robinson. And, of course, he was part of the Dodgers when they made the move from Brooklyn to L.A. So there's some very fascinating stories in that book with great humor. Ransom has a great sense of humor, and I think we captured in the book. So that's where they can read more about my work. And on Singles and Smiles, I just received this today, and I can pass this on to your listeners. They can go online, visit Roman, R-O-W-M-A-N, .com, or they can call 1-800-462-6420, and they can use this promotional code, R-L-F-A-N, D as in David, F-3-O, and save 30%. Get a 30% discount on Singles and Smiles, and that'll take the price down to $24.50. And so that's the promotional code they'll need, and call that number and order Singles and Smiles.
Galen, thank you very much for taking out the time to join us to discuss your work. It was a pleasure speaking with you, and again, I've enjoyed the book up to this point, so again, I appreciate that, and again, thank you very much for the time today.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it, Jordan.
And with that, we are out of time on this edition of Drive Time Sports. I want to thank Galen White for coming on the show, as well as Troy Winter, and congratulations to the Emory Sport and Soccer team. For Travis Anderson, I'm Jordan Buscarini. We will catch you tomorrow, same time, same place. Be safe. We are out.